All right, at this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify requirements for chairing a meeting at Central. At the Central Orlando Group Saturday night speakers meeting are 1 year of continuous sobriety, have Central as your home group, and attend a group conscience meeting. I've done all of those things, and again, my name is Marissa. I'm an alcoholic. When I first came to AA, I thought that my biggest thing was that I just wanted to stop drinking. Well, really not even wanted to stop drinking so much as I wanted to kind of not want to die every day and maybe kind of have a sense of normalcy back and maybe to stop drinking because I had kind of lost, I felt like I came to the point where I lost the ability to choose that. And then I came in here and I learned I actually had a few other problems other than drinking, and you guys showed me that, and that drinking was actually how I felt better as a result of having those problems continue to pile up. So, I'm very, very grateful for this program. This last month has been rocky with, some personal, family issues and things that have been going on, but those things are working out. I know that I always have the comfort of, having you all in these rooms and knowing that I have a solution today and that taking a drink is definitely not going to make it better. So I'm grateful to be here. I'm glad you're here. Thanks for letting me chair this meeting tonight. And the speaker, the last three speakers that I picked this month, I picked them because all of them had found spirituality in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, through getting to know them in this program, I've grown to respect each of them because I can identify where they're coming from, because that's how I found God, was in these rooms too. And this next speaker, I actually remember when she first came in. And she used to wear, I remember because she used to come in the 6 o'clock and she used to wear this big hoodie and she used to pull it in so nobody could see her face. And the beauty of this is that I got to watch the light come on in her eyes. I see her engaged in a lot of service. She does a lot with Vicky Pa and a lot of the young people. She stays in the middle of this program. She's a beautiful person. I'm extremely proud to know her. And with that, I'm going to let her share her story tonight. Please welcome Stacy.
Hey everyone, I'm Stacy. I'm an alcoholic. I'm nervous. This is my home group, and for me it's hard to talk at my home group because y'all know me. It's easier for me to drive to West Palm or something and never see those people again, but we'll see how it goes. My sobriety date's October 19th, 2007, and my job here is to tell you what it was like, what happened, what it's like now, and I prayed for God to help me deliver this message, so if you don't like what I deliver, blame him, not me. takes it off of me a little. So I'll just start where what it was like. I grew up in California, very good family. My parents gave... I feel like this is in my face. Yeah, it is. My parents gave me everything I needed. I had every opportunity. My parents are both attorneys, and so we were middle class. We were very, very comfortable growing up. I have an identical twin sister and an older sister. And my sisters seemed to be normal for a while. They got along with everyone. They had tons of friends. They were comfortable going to school. They had anywhere they went, it was like everything glowed through them. For me, I always felt awkward. I always felt different, even from just a little tiny girl, and I just never fit in anywhere. I also always did things in drastic measures. I remember my parents telling me later on, once I got sober, that they knew they might have a problem because on my fifth birthday, I ate half the sheet cake, threw up, ate the other half. And that's how I drank, too. It didn't matter. That's how I did everything in my entire life, everything to extremes. I went to public school, and all that. My parents didn't really believe in putting me in the private school system. They thought it's good enough, I'll make it out as well as I could. But the thing about it was that I always wanted to be bigger and better than everybody else. And I always wanted to have the A's, and back then it was like 1, 2, 3, like number system type of thing. And I just always, I always want to be better than my sisters. And my sisters and I never got along growing up, especially my twin sister and me. It usually ended up with the door being missing for a month from all of our rooms, and things like that. We got kind of violent with each other. We got kind of violent with each other. And really that was about kind of us striving for attention, the sister rivalry and everything. Today I'm very close with both of my sisters. And that's because of this program. I'm growing up, going through elementary school and everything. I actually got involved in this youth dance and singing and all that kind of stuff. I can't sing worth anything today. I don't think I could then. But it was something that made me stand out. And but I was still that awkward child. You know, I was that one that just kind of stood alone, really, really stood alone, and all the kids kind of knew to leave her alone. When I was 8, we had a birthday party, my sister and me. We shared everything, shared birthdays, you know, twins, that happens that way. And that's when things started happening for me, things started changing. I didn't really have any friends at that party. My sister had all the friends, but I would claim them as my friends to make myself feel better. And there was an incident where it was a pool party, and there was an incident where I ended up being molested by the lifeguard. And I say this because I learned a lot of life lessons really young, but at the same time, they were completely false. I was too young to realize where other people stood and what other people's beliefs were and how they felt and what was going on with them. I tried to tell my parents, and they didn't want to believe me. The reason for that is because who has a baby and hires someone that ends up hurting them and wants to believe that? You know, you have kids, and you want them to grow up, have happy lives, go to school, get married, just have a great life. And I learned to accept that and forgive them in this program. Back to that, when I was 8, things started to turn down south for me. I became even more secluded, and I have a lot of other things to my story that brought me here today. I'm going to stick as much as I can to alcoholism, but it is kind of a big portion of my story is other issues. I took my first drink when I was 8 also. It was New Year's Eve, and my parents were having this party at their friend's house, and I was there, and my dad offered me some champagne. He offered me a sip. It didn't work out that way. And they ended up putting me to bed. I was not feeling too hot, and but I also felt better. Something changed in my life. You know, I got that kind of relief. And it was kind of off to the races at that point. I developed an eating disorder at that point also, a way to fit in, a way to look better, a way to feel better, all that. It was another outlet for me. And when I was 10, my parents caught on to what was going on, so I went to treatment at 11 for the first time. I didn't go for alcoholism or anything, but I did go for the eating disorder, which was just another outlet for me. After that point, I never really stayed home. I was in and out of treatment, and I learned a lot of things in treatment. My big sister at that time also was figuring out alcohol, and she is actually in a treatment center right now in Texas for the same disease that we have. It is, you know, I believe it's a family disease that runs in the family. And so I learned from her. You know, I like to pick up from other people. I for some reason, I never watched the positive things that people were doing. I always watched the negative. And it was hard for me to get attention in my family because I had, there were two of us. You know, it was always the twins or Jessica's little sisters or something like that. And so I wanted something that would make me stand out, whether it was positive or negative. And that was it, you know, acting out. And when I was going into middle school, we ended up moving to like 20 minutes away, but it was because I was going to a school that incorporated a nursery because so many of the 6th, 7th, and 8th graders were getting pregnant. So my parents said, let's make a change. And so we moved, and that was difficult for me. I met this girl who was practically, she was like my best friend, but at the same time, her mom hated me. She knew what I had been doing. She knew my behavior. She knew I was drinking on the side sometimes and all that. And she was very religious, and she told her daughter that I was possessed by the devil and she wasn't allowed to hang out with me. So therefore, in middle school, rumors spread, and I became possessed by the devil, and no one hung out with me. I was kind of that kid that, I lived in a really small town at that point. I was that kid that everyone, if I was walking down the streets, people would yell at me to get off their lawn because I was possessed by the devil. I'm not possessed by the devil, by the way. yeah, thank God. But it did mess with me a little bit, you know. I wanted to be liked. I wanted so badly to be liked, but I couldn't. There was nothing that would get me there. And so I just went off into my own world. I went off into the alcohol. I started using other substances. We'll call those condiments for now. And my eating disorder was raging, too. I went to treatment multiple more times, and I ended up, at first I was going to treatment centers in California, and then my parents said, okay, we're going to send you somewhere else to a geographical change, and I ended up in Texas for a little while, went there 3 or 4 times, and every time I would go home back to California, I'd last 3 weeks at most, and then I'd be shipped off again. When I was 13, the program in Texas pulled my parents in and told them, which is not true today, that I had schizoaffective disorder and that I was bipolar. Turns out I was just coming off of things and, you know, I'm just an alcoholic. and they told that my parents at 13 years old that I was never going to get out of treatment. That the rest of my life I was going to be going in and out and in and out, and they were just going to have to save up their funds and institutionalize me forever. I was not supposed to hear that conversation, but I was listening. And I believed it. I firmly believed it. You know, it talks about in the book, it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And I believed that for years, that I was destined to fail. So when I came in here, I honestly believed I was one of those rarelys. You know, I thought I was a rarely, so I just didn't even really try very hard. So I left Texas, went back home, went back to Utah this time, went back home, went back to Utah another time, and that program ended up not being such a hot program. Learned another life lesson that turned out to be false. And it was a program that ended up being shut down by the courts because they were sexually and physically abusive to their clients. And I couldn't really do anything about it. You know, I'm in Utah, and they have control, and if I say something over the phone, my parents are going to get cut off and just all this stuff, and I didn't know what to do. You know, I was at a loss. And I knew I wasn't crazy in that sense, you know, but who's going to believe me at this point? Who's going to believe me? At that point, I'd been to, like, 14 different treatment centers. And so the staff would actually sneak in alcohol and things like that for me, and that was to mellow me out and get me to not say anything. Later on, it got shut down by the courts, and I went home. The life lesson I learned is that my parents refused to believe it again until they saw it in the papers and researched. I actually had to go online and prove to them what was going on. That was very hurtful for me for a long time. I thought, I'm never going to be honest again, you know, no one's ever going to believe me anyway. What's the point? There's no point. And again, my parents are set out to help me. You know, they were sending me across the country to send me somewhere where I was supposed to be kept safe. And it's hard for any parent, I believe, to imagine that they could send their child somewhere where they end up getting hurt like that. And so I've forgiven them again. So I went back to California, and that didn't work out again. That time I stayed home for about a month, and it still wasn't good. My big sister and I were, every time either of us got in trouble, we just blamed the other person, because my parents knew that both of us were having issues in the substances and alcohol problem. So every time we got caught or something was wrong, it was just she did it, not me. And that worked for a while until they sent us both away. And my twin sister is home this entire time, which was, I never knew how hard that was for her to be gone, or to be at home living normal middle school, high school life with all of her friends knowing that her twin sister and her big sister are both addicts and alcoholics, you know, screwing up their lives. And I know now what that, how I've harmed her. And that really does make me sad to think about every time, so I try not to think about it. But, so I went back to California for a while, and that didn't work out. I went to another program in Utah. I have a lot of programs. and I did pretty well there. I was there about a year and a half, and I graduated high school there with a regular high school diploma. It was a therapeutic boarding school, and they were good people there. They were really good people there. But it didn't last so long. My parents wanted me to start living my life. I was 18 at this point, and they wanted me to start living. So I moved to Florida. They gave me a choice with a transitional program from Florida or California, and I said, Florida, I want to be as far away from you as I can. So they put me in Florida. And I lasted about 8.5 months in that program, and that's when my alcoholism got so bad. Just so bad. I've been thinking a lot lately about when I first came in here. And honestly, I don't remember the first month and a half very well at all. Actually, I don't remember it in the slightest. But I was in this transition program, and I drinking and just doing things every single night, my insanity takes me to places where I get really paranoid, and I'm that kind of person that thinks that the car in front of them is following me, and, you know, like, I get really, really just out there when I'm in that crazy mode. And it's just, but I didn't see anything wrong with it at the time, until I woke up in Florida Hospital. I had gone on a few-day binge. This program I was at was brand new, and so they were starting to pick things up, but they were kind of slow on figuring it all out. And I woke up after having a minor heart attack and in a coma for 17 days. They then suggested I go to the residential program, and I said, okay, I might just have a problem, maybe. And you'd think that would be enough, you know, 18 years old, heart attack and coma, you'd think that would be enough for someone to realize there's a major issue here and there needs to be a major change. But I still was under the focus that this is not going to happen for me. I'm the person that's on the billboards where they're looking horrible, you know, when you're driving on, looking on the billboards and they're saying, don't be like this person and everything. I'm that picture. I'm that poster child of, you don't want to be like this. And I believed I was destined to die. I did not believe in God very much at that point. I believe there was possibly someone out there or something out there, but I didn't believe he liked me. Truth is, I abandoned my higher power. I abandoned God, and he did not abandon me. Because thinking back, there were so many times when I should have died. You know, I should not be here right now, but God was watching out for me. When I first came in here, I wanted to take all that credit. But I learned pretty quickly that that's not the case. So I went to this treatment center. It's actually right up the street. And I was there for a few years. But they were under the impression that I was not a hopeless case. They did not believe I was a failure, which was odd for me. I tried to make them think I was a failure. I really, really tried. But they would not give up on me. And I'm... sorry. I'm so blessed that I got to go to that place. They recommended I go to AA, and so I did because it was an hour away from treatment a day. Marissa touched on how I came in. I was not a happy camper. I was angry. I was so full of rage, so many resentments, but I wouldn't admit that I had a resentment, but it was clear on my face if you could see it through my hoodie. It was kind of like my hoodie to me was like a baby security blanket, you know? If I was wearing it, you don't want to look at me, you don't want to touch me, go away, I don't like you. That was how I saw this place. I saw it as an escape for an hour. And I also did not think that I was an alcoholic when I came in. I really didn't. I thought that maybe I had the condiment problem only. And after sitting in the rooms for a while, I realized that it's the alcohol that really kicked me. It is, you know, it was definitely the alcohol that had me surrendered, you know. And I went a month here sober, and I decided I don't want to do this anymore. I'm just going to test the waters a little bit. And so they have nurses, the treatment program, and so I stole a bunch of the medication from the nursing station and counted that as a relapse, of course. So my original sobriety date was 1 month before my sobriety date now. It was exactly 1 month. And I just wasn't ready. I wasn't ready at all. But I, at this point, you know, I'm still 18 years old, but I see on, okay, so there's Facebook, and I see on Facebook all my friends from high school, or wannabe friends, the ones I wanted to be my friends, from high school, going to college, some of them having babies, some of them getting married, and I'm yet in my 22nd treatment center. You know, what am I doing with my life? Why? And, There's a speaker, or not a speaker, another alcoholic, another member of the program, who came here every single day. He actually moved down south about a year ago, and he's the reason I came back, because I heard the message in him. I believe that God talks through us. You know, God is not gonna. I'm not gonna pray for something and then pick up the phone one day and hear, "Hey, Stace, this is God talking. I'm just telling you that this is how this is going to be," and blah, blah, blah. It doesn't work that way. You know, I believe that God talks through human beings, and as long as I open my eyes, I can see it and I can hear it. And I heard it. I didn't believe it was God at that point. I just was interested in this guy's story. But I kept coming back. And you guys all kept telling me, keep coming back, and I wanted to say, F you. Pretty much. I don't want to keep coming back. I don't like you people. I'm only here for you. I believe, like, first 9 months, I stayed sober, but I was also sitting in the rooms with the hoodie on, and when 15 to the hour came, and they say any burning desires, I'd raise my hands and say, you know, you guys should stop drinking, because you're all going to die, and this is not going to work out for you in the end. But it was never about, maybe I should stop drinking. You know, I always placed it on you guys. It was always, I can help these people. I was deluded. And eventually, one of my best friends today, she was chairing the step meeting, and she decided to stop calling on me. And I didn't understand why until recently. She told me recently why. It was never a good thing I was about to say. And, but at a certain point, I don't know exactly when it happened, I just got desperate. I just got so desperate, and I was in so much pain. You know that feeling where your brain is not controlling your body anymore? You know, I remember sitting on my bed, and it was like my dresser was like about the middle row over here, and I had just tons of stuff on it, tons of alcohol and other things. And I remember saying to myself, just don't do it. You know, just don't. Just go to sleep. Just stop. And I couldn't do it. You know, I couldn't not drink. And I don't know when that switch happened, but at some point I lost that ability to choose anymore. I couldn't make the decision not to drink anymore. I lost that. And I heard that in the rooms. I heard you guys saying, this is where I'm at. I believe it's the most beautiful thing when somebody comes in and they're brand new and they say, I don't want to drink anymore, but I don't know how to stay sober. I believe that that is the most beautiful place to be, because it was the best place for me to be at a certain point. Because all I could go was up, you know? All I could do at that point was get sober. And I had nothing to lose anymore. So I got a sponsor, and I dropped that sponsor. She wasn't sponsoring me how I wanted to be sponsored. and that didn't work out for me, because I went a little bit of a time without a sponsor, and I was still getting crazy. I was still miserable. It wasn't working. And so I got another sponsor, and actually chose this sponsor because I believe she gave the best hugs. and I had this sponsor for about 2 years, and it was really good for me. It was really, really good for me. I could not do this thing alone. I could not do this thing where I'm not accountable for someone. She had me call her for the first 30 days. And when I sponsor girls and I tell them to call me for the first 30 days, usually the response is, are you serious? 30 days I have to call you every single day? And I usually inform them that the reason why I have them do that is not so that I can keep you accountable or I can know where you're at or know what you're doing. You know, I'm here to help you through it if you want it. If you want to drink, go drink. You know, I can't force you in anything. The reason I believe that we call for the first 30 days, at least I did, was because when I'm calling and things are good, it's a lot easier to pick up that phone. And when I'm in practice mode and I want to drink so bad, it is almost impossible to pick up that phone. So when I'm used to it, it's a lot easier. And so I called her for the first 30 days. She got me involved in service work right away. Things as simple as, you know, stacking the chairs after the 8 p.m. meeting, you know, picking up the books. I was still really shaky at that point. I didn't understand what was going on. It took me probably about a year and a half to unfog my brain. I don't remember the first month and a half of sobriety at all. I know what people have told me I was like, but sometimes it's hard for me to believe that. I was told to shake the newcomer's hand, even though I had, you know, at some points I had like 2 days sobriety. She said, go shake that person's hand. They're new. And I thought, what do I have to offer them? Well, you have one more day than them. You know, you have one more day, and go shake their hands. And I listened to all the suggestions. Sometimes I didn't listen willingly at first, but I listened, and I worked these steps. I worked these steps to the best of my ability. I am definitely a perfectionist. Definitely a perfectionist. And but that's what's so great about this program. I don't believe there's any perfect way to work these steps, unless I think the perfect way is staying sober. You know, it's not something I feel that I need to be perfect at. And I came here for the first 2 years. I was here every single day, 2 to 3 times a day. And I really began to hear the message once I opened my ears. My sponsor told me at first, for the first 90 days, to take the cotton out of my ears and shove it in my mouth, and I wasn't allowed to talk. So what I did was, when it came to me, I said, my sponsor says I'm not allowed to talk, but I'm Stacy, I'm an alcoholic. But, I mean, you guys got it, you know? You knew, you've been there, so... And you said, keep coming back. Welcome. I started to get this thing. I started to get involved, not just in service work, but also knowing people. I did the raffle for a while. That's a great job to get to know people, you know? And I personally like harassing people, so it was really quite fun. and people started recognizing me. They started saying, hey, Stacy, even if I didn't know their name, they still knew me. And it kind of weirded me out that they wanted me around. And We kind of switched a few years ago. It used to, I think it's in the little room now. It was a sign that says you're not alone anymore up there. And I really felt that. I felt like I was wanted for the first time. I was still angry. I still had resentments. I still had a lot of things to work through and just move past. But for some reason, I knew you guys would love me through it. And I think that's something really big in this program. I came in as just a self-loathing mess. You know, I hated myself, and I didn't understand why God put me on this earth. I thought that everybody makes mistakes, so God might make a mistake too, and I was it. But you guys loved me until I could love myself. And I'm not used to that. I was never used to that, and it was wonderful, absolutely wonderful. I have family here. You know, my family's 3,000 miles away, my immediate blood family. But you guys are my family too. And, you know, one guy here calls me his adopted AA daughter. You know, I got adopted AA moms and sisters and brothers and just all these people that it actually, like, makes me choke up thinking how blessed I am. And I believe that I'm really grateful to be an alcoholic, because there are a lot of problems out there that don't have a solution. And ours is pretty simple. It's pretty simple. It's 12 simple steps. And as long as we work them, we're golden. You know, circumstances in my life have not changed. It's still life. But I know how to deal with it now. I know how to cope, and I know how to walk through it. And when I'm struggling with walking through it, I walk through it with you guys. And it's all good. It's all golden. I have a higher power today, and I believe that my God is a gentleman. He doesn't go where he's not wanted. At the same time, when I didn't want him before, he was there because he knew I needed it. But today, he doesn't go where he's not wanted. I believe he's kind of one of those people. You ever talk to somebody and they're just talking at you and you can't get a word in edgewise and you just want to tell them to stop talking for a moment? I can't do that with my higher power. I can't pray at my higher power. I can't pray at God. I got to listen too. A lot of these steps have two different steps to the step, if that makes any sense. When I ask God, I got to listen. You know, when I admit I'm powerless, I also got to admit I'm unmanageable, because those things go kind of hand in hand. That was my biggest struggle getting sober, was admitting I was unmanageable. I spent like 7 weeks on this unmanageability list because I could not figure out what it was. But the reason why it was such a struggle, because my parents also saved me every single time I got in any trouble. I have a great relationship with my parents today. Fantastic relationship. I'm actually going home on Friday to spend a week and a half with them. I wasn't allowed in the state of California for a long time by my parents. And now they're pretty much two of my favorite people in the world. Last October, I want to say, I graduated school. And I hadn't talked to before I graduated, I hadn't seen my twin sister for about a year and a half. And the last time I saw her, she told me that the only time she wanted to see me was at a funeral, and she was hoping it was mine. She was angry at me. She hated me. And then for my graduation, she bought her own plane ticket to come see me graduate. You know, that's probably one of the biggest blessings in this program for me, is to have my sister. Sorry, I don't like to cry. And my big sister is struggling. You know, she's really having a tough time. But I'm there for her. I can be there for her today. And I don't know. God works in mysterious ways. Really does. It's not my way. Definitely not my way. I would have taken a different route, but it wouldn't turned out well. Wouldn't turned out like this. I I think the biggest turning point for me in working these steps was when I did my fourth and fifth step. I know a lot of people are like, the fourth step, ooh, that's scary. It was scary for me because people pumped it up to be scary. But when I did my fifth step, those promises occurred. You know, I went to the state convention this weekend, and I heard a speaker talk about how he felt like his head was stapled, his chin was stapled to his chest because he couldn't look people in the eye. He couldn't, it just didn't happen. And those staples, after I got sober and worked through four and five, those staples were removed. I started being able to look people in the eye, but most importantly, I started just a baby bit to look myself in the eye. You know, I couldn't do that for a really long time. And it's just a blessing. It's truly a blessing. You know, I've learned how to accept life on life terms, which is weird for me because I like to control. I really like to control things, but I've learned that there things happen for a reason. I recently lost my job that I loved. I love this job. And doors in this field, doors kept slamming in my face for a reason. And I wasn't able to see it. And it was just God saying, Stacy, you're going a different route. You're going to go a different route. And so now I'm going back to school. You know, I'm going to go back to school and do something I've always really, really wanted to do. And I don't know. I can't express the gratitude enough. I really can't. I'm really involved in this FikiPaw stuff, as y'all know. My second sponsor, because the first one dropped me. My second sponsor really wanted me to get involved in the young people because I was 18 when I came in here, and I had been raised by doctors and nurses and therapists and all these people that I couldn't relate to someone my own age. I was very uncomfortable with those people, the ones my age. and she had me start going to young people's meetings. It took her about 2 years to get me to go to a single young person's meeting. I'd make excuses, it's too late, I can't drive yet, or something like that, you know. But as soon as I did, my life changed dramatically. It changed drastically, and that's because I was open to the suggestions. And I was on the host committee last year for this convention, and I cried for 3 days after because I was so happy, so happy. People my age liked me. I still don't always know why. But it's just the case. It's, again, one of those cases where y'all love me into me loving myself and accepting myself. We also have a convention coming up, in case y'all didn't know. I want to keep this seat. I want to keep this seat. If you're new, you're not hopeless. You're not a hopeless case. You're not a rarely, you know, like I believed. You are not a rarely, and you don't have to drink. It's not necessary. You don't have to go through everything that we put ourselves through. You know, we're very, it said a lot here that we're complicated people, and this is a simple program, and we twist the two. And as long as we're willing to take the suggestions, we'll get the results. One of my favorite little slogans is faith without works is dead. And that means to me that I've got to take the action. I can't just pray and pray and pray and pray. I can't do that. I've got to take some action, take some footwork. I got to work with the newcomer. You know, I got to volunteer for things. I got to support other people. And then it'll happen. And it might not be my plan, but it's God's plan, and it'll work out a lot better than what my plan was. I know that for a fact. I can't say that I know God's plan. I can't. But it's a ride. This life in general, it's definitely a ride. And I'm honored to be a part of it. You know, I don't really like, I know I said earlier that I should be dead right now. I don't really like to say that, to be honest, because I shouldn't, because God got me through. You know, there's a reason I'm not. And I don't know if it's to help someone else or what it is, but there's a reason I'm here, and there's a reason I'm sitting in these chairs. I'll tell you, I did not aspire to being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous when I was little. I didn't grow up thinking, I'm going to be an AA one day. But these are the cards I was dealt, and there's some great cards. There's some winning cards. I'm just really blessed to be here. I really am, and it's an honor. Honestly, my biggest concern was if I could see over the podium. But not going to lie. But it's an honor to speak at my home group where I got, you know, my family. It's a blessing to be able to work with others and see the light shine in their eyes. Once someone gets it, it's so clear. It is so clear. Once they work some of those steps and some of those promises start happen, they go from this to this to this to this. And they're smiling. I remember the first time I smiled, I was looking in the mirror, and I didn't understand what was going on because it had been like 15 years since I had smiled. You know, I did not understand what was happening. I thought something was wrong with my face. honestly, I think I called my sponsor. and she just said, Stacey, you're happy. And that was really uncomfortable for a while for me. But I used to be really comfortable in the depression. I used to be really comfortable in the misery. It was all I knew. Now, today, I'm uncomfortable in the depression. I'm uncomfortable in the misery and all the negative things. I am so comfortable in the happiness. I love my life, you know. I love my life, and I wouldn't change a single thing about it. And it's not because of me. It is definitely not because of me. It's because of these rooms and this book and these steps and you people. And I'm just, it's truly a blessing to be here. So thank you.